The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine, Tuesday, the 21st of November, 2023. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. And we've lots to discuss on the program as always. We want you involved in that conversation, or maybe there's something that you want to highlight yourself or an issue you want to talk about. The lines are open and it's your show. It's 086 60 25 000. That's your WhatsApp and your text number. You can send your voice notes to WhatsApp as well if you prefer to communicate with us that way. If you want to give us a call, the lines are open as well. Caroline and Shannon taking your calls on 07491 25 000. And we welcome your emails to comments@email.com. No, that won't, girls. comments@highlandradio.com, that will. And also, if you want to watch the show and join Dolores, Nanny and the rest of the crew who are already on board, go to YouTube on your smart TV, your Fire Stick or your mobile devices. You'll see us on Highland Radio Ireland, and we're also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Okay, we've lots to get through on the programme this morning, so let's start with the papers. The Donegal Democrat this morning: two people have been sent forward for trial at the Central Criminal Court, charged with murder after the body of a man was found off Sleeve League cliffs on July 3rd. Alan Vial and Nikita Burns have been charged with murdering Robert Wilkin. Vial, 38, appeared in person at Letterkenny District Court, while Burns, 21, appeared by video link from the Dochas Centre at Mountjoy Prison. The court was told that the Director of Public Prosecutions has consented to sending both forward for trial to the current sitting of the Central Criminal Court. On to the Nationals now, and on to the Irish Independent. And just to warn you, but not make you scared, of course, infants under the age of a year are being worst hit by a potentially life-threatening winter virus that's now circulating at high levels. Among the 213 patients hospitalised with respiratory syncytial virus, that's RSV, we more commonly know it as, in the week ending last Friday, as many as 188 were under a year in age. It comes as the HSE warned of the prospect of another triple demic of flu, RSV and COVID as we enter the toughest weeks of winter, and said it was disappointed at flu and COVID booster uptake so far. And I think really the reticent and the conversation around the COVID jab has probably stopped people going to get the flu jab. They're lumping them all in. I would be surprised if that wasn't at least part of the case. Well, hospitals are already feeling pressure from a significant level of RSV, particularly our paediatric services, it warned. It called on people to get their vaccines against flu, which is on the rise, and also COVID, which continues to be stable levels here. But the RSV is a pretty nasty one, just to keep an eye on. It's very worrying when you've a newborn. Well, I think for a lot of people it is. You're worrying about them all the time because they're so young and fragile. And if the truth be told, we as humans, is it gestate would be the word, after we're born to some extent. So you really keep a really close eye on them. And it's kind of a worrying time, but we just have to be careful and keep our keep aware, and also trust your gut. It's the best guidance you can have, I think. The Irish Times this morning: there's a loophole that's allowing some drivers to get out of penalty points. I hadn't heard of this before, so I thought you might be interested in it. A loophole in the Road Traffic Act means some drivers have avoided penalty points in return for being disqualified for periods as short as one day. Use of the loophole is legal, and at least two district court judges have granted applications made by solicitors on behalf of a small number of drivers for short disqualifications. Some drivers have been permitted to select a day of disqualification, such as a Sunday, when they will not need their vehicle for work, according to legal sources. One solicitor, who asked not to be identified, said there's a disquiet amongst some lawyers and Gardaí about such applications, especially given the increasing number of road deaths. Barrister David Staunton, an expert on road traffic legislation and author of Drunken Driving, which examines the law on drunk and drug driving and related intoxication offences, said the situation arises because of Section 2.8 of the Road Traffic Act 2002. It provides that where a person admits or is convicted of a penalty point offence and an ancillary disqualification from driving order is made in respect of that offence, those penalty points shall not be endorsed on the affected person's licence. The legislation, does not specify a minimum period of disqualification. So in some cases where there's a perfect storm, people are getting out of points to take a one-day ban. I'm sure the insurance companies would take an interesting view of that, because theoretically you have been disqualified from driving. And I wonder, are these drivers informing their insurance companies that they have faced a driving disqualification? Because it would have an impact on their insurance, I'm sure. That would be an interesting follow-up question. A proposal to significantly reduce entitlements to Ukrainian refugees arriving in Ireland will not be ready for several more weeks, this according to the Irish Daily Mail. Between 500 and 800 refugees from Ukraine continue to arrive here each week, with the state struggling to source new temporary accommodation to house them. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar recently said that while there is no limit on the compassion of the Irish government and the Irish people, there is a limit on our capacity, and we are very much at that. A memo was expected, according to some cabinet sources, to be ready for today's weekly meeting of ministers. However, despite a perceived urgency to reduce the benefits given to Ukrainians, the Irish Daily Mail has learned that there is currently no date in the diary for the sub-cabinet committee on the humanitarian response to Ukraine to meet. And there's also some figures published today as the cost of housing Ukrainians has gone up to, I don't want to throw out the figure, I think it's somewhere in the region of 360 million. I will grab that figure for you at some point. But anyway, Leo Varadkar effectively saying we've done as much as we possibly can do at this point. The Irish Daily Star: hundreds of thousands of people will this week receive payments under the first tranche of cost of living support payments agreed in the budget. Social Protection Minister Heather Humphreys has outlined the details of the three payments, totalling €230 million due to be paid. A €300 fuel allowance lump sum payment will be paid to 409,000 households throughout the week. From Wednesday to Friday, a €400 disability support grant will be paid to 214,000 people with disabilities who receive disability allowance, invalidity pension, or the blind pension. On Thursday, a €400 lump sum working family payment will be paid to 45,000 families with 97,000 children. All lump sum supports are automatically paid to eligible recipients with no application required. The three payments are the first of a total of nine lump sums that will be paid between November and January. So for some people, there's going to be some crossover. They'll receive in excess of €1,000 in payments this week if they're entitled to all three, as likely as unlikely as that may be. Are you excited? Because the Northwest, Midlands Northwest, could be getting another MEP. It's covered in all the papers. I've picked it out of the Sun this morning. Ireland's additional European parliamentary seats will be allocated to the Midlands Northwest constituency. It was confirmed yesterday. It follows a decision by the European Council to increase the number of Irish MEPs from 13 to 14 in September. The Electoral Commission looked at which of the three constituencies should be given the seat, and we speculated about this months ago, and it was spot on. It means the number of seats in the Midlands Northwest will increase to five. To accommodate the addition, it will also recommend that the counties of Laois and Offaly transfer from the South constituency into the Midlands constituency. And an interesting move, Marion Fitzgerald says she won't be contesting that seat. And there are quite interesting ramifications from that decision that will perhaps impact on the general election. And we could be seeing quite a shift in terms of, you know, a movement of people and who might enter the fray, even those that have not been in the fray for quite some time. John McAteer of the Tyrconnell Tribune is going to be joining me in less than 5 minutes. Do we go through that? And some of it might surprise you, some of the people that might end up in Europe and some of those that might come back into the fold of politics in the general election. It's all tied to that MEP situation, so stay with. And finally, the Irish Daily Mirror: a security expert's calling for mandatory self-defence lessons in schools, saying the number of women coming to the classes has increased by 1,000% in recent years. Anthony Cunanan, who teaches Krav Maga nationwide with a team of instructors, has also suggested gifting a tactical pen or voucher for any self-defence classes this Christmas. Krav Maga is a self-protective system for improving people's safety knowledge along with practical skills. Would you like to see our children have mandatory self-defense classes in schools? What do you think? I think maybe we need to... Is it too late? Have we given up on society to the point whereby that's what's needed? Because things are the way they are? Or what? What's your views? 086 60 25,000. Now, we're joined on the programme by John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it's fantastic to see you and great to have you on the programme. Right, OK, there's a couple of things going on here. Obviously, the Midlands Northwest constituency for the European Parliament elections next June is going to have an extra seat. But I'm really interested in that, but also the ramifications it's going to have for politics here in the general election, because Mairead McGuinness has announced that, she's announced changes to her political future. And it kind of went under the radar for many, not all, that earlier this month, Charlie McConnell Logue didn't rule himself out of contention for the role of Ireland's European Commissioner. So we'll go through all of that and the ramifications of all of these things. But as I say, the political landscape at general election time could be very much changed, and it's all intertwined here. So firstly, the significance of this additional MEP for the Midlands Northwest constituency.
It leaves us with 15 counties, Greg, Laois and Offaly coming into Midlands Northwest. It's going to be a massive size of a constituency, given the last time it was 1.224 million. It'll probably be up there at 1.4 million, even above that. I think there's a number of factors there. There's a lot of travel to cover that constituency, and to cover 15 counties in 5 or 6 months and get a foothold there and get a vote there is a huge, huge task for all of the parties. There's going to be big decisions to be made. Mairead McGuinness has already made one of them. I say that on two grounds. She's probably one of the best known vote getters in Fine Gael, given that she took 134,000 plus votes, 22.6%. It's going to be very hard to put somebody in there to replicate that because, you know, their second seat, Maria Walsh, was down just under 11% at 64,500. So there's a lot been played for there.
Yeah, and Maria Walsh has done a great deal to boost her profile. She's very active in right across the Midlands Northwest. She's here really quite regularly and puts herself about a bit. So she would hope to maintain or in fact build beyond that. Who else possibly then could join her, do you believe, on the Fine Gael ticket?
Colm Markey says he's running anyway.
Yeah, he's off. Yeah,
that's going to be it. It'll be suicide to try a third candidate because like that's not on. Because the one issue that we have with European elections, they seem so remote to the electorate. Last time we managed to just scrape past 50% of a turnout, and given that you add in those two new counties, we're going to be so remote from each other, you know. And the Northwest will probably be represented. We're going to have Chris McManus there for Sinn Féin. Will Sinn Féin have a second candidate? Most likely they will have. Although, like who did he replace in 2020?
My blind's gone blank, John. I'm afraid he come back to that.
Matt Carthy, he replaced.
That's right. He went to the Dáil, of course.
Matt Carthy was a pretty good vote catcher, but a way short of Mairead McGuinness. He was on about 13%. So you're talking there 77,500 votes. Sinn Féin would need another very strong runner to have to copper fasten the seat that they have with Chris McManus. Now, Chris has been up here quite a bit as well. They've all been up here quite a bit, to be quite honest, you know.
It's the Fianna Fáil situation. It's perhaps the most interesting from a Donegal perspective because there's three relatively strong names in there, isn't there? Barry Cowan, who is likely to enter the fray. We know that Niall Blaney is looking to have his name put forward. Lisa Chambers is in there as well, isn't she?
Very much so. And you see, this is where there's a problem for Niall Blaney, if it is a problem, because they won't run three people. If Barry Cowan and Lisa Chambers, they're both pretty well positioned. it leaves it more difficult for Niall Blaney to get his name, to get his foot in that door there, based up in North Donegal. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's going to be a lot, lot more difficult. And, I mean, Fianna Fáil performed very badly the last time out. I mean, Brendan Smith, pretty well-known figure, senior man in the party, getting 7.2%, and Anne Rabbit, also well-known in the west of Ireland, based in Galway, on 5%. Like, they're in around that 12.3%. They're not going too far with that unless they get better candidates than what they had the last time. So if they're serious about getting that seat, they're going to have to put in some of their big hitters. And you look at Peter Casey's vote the last time, it was quite astounding that he was fit to get that 9.5% of a vote out of nothing, 56,650. And he just had to mention one issue, and that was travellers. And all of a sudden, the doors opened. This is the kind of candidate that is likely to pick up a huge vote.
Is Michael Fitzmaurice that candidate? Now, not necessarily going down the route of being anti-anything as such, but he's pretty popular and would be pretty popular, you know, west, northwest of the constituency. I understand there's a bit of pressure on him to weigh up his options in favour of a run for Europe.
Like, he's very well placed in Roscommon. He's pretty well known as well. He has used the media very well. He's been very vocal, and he's always in the news. He's an issues man as an independent. He has performed extremely well across the last two Dáils, and he hasn't given any indication one way or the other whether he intends to run or not. He would be a formidable candidate, but you see, you have Luke Ming Flanagan in there, 14.3%, 85,000 votes the last time. Ideally placed right in the heart of the Midlands.
And he does spend a lot of time talking about farming issues as well.
He's been very vocal also on the Mickey Redress thing, mm-hmm. and that petitions committee that he basically got organised to come over here. And it's very, very hard to see, like, we have that one next to seat, who's going to get that. The odds are not on anybody at the moment because it was just only announced yesterday. And it's the election is still 7 months away. It's probably going to be that weekend over the 7th, 8th of June. I think it has to be held across a date from, say, between the 6th and the 9th of June, which maybe takes on a Sunday, because some of the European countries do vote on the Sunday. But it's a gigantic task to get out there and get on the road. First of all, you have to get over the lack of interest that's going to be in it. I mean, 50%. We have got a lot out of Europe. We're now a net contributor to it by about 2 billion. But I think that's not the point. We have done so well out of Europe. Maybe Brussels is too remote for us.
And eaten bread is soon forgotten.
Totally. And you see, where do you get issues to run with nowadays, given that our economy is swinging along at a fair pace?
You see, and also the one thing, too, I find interesting in speaking to MEPs, mostly off the record, but on the record. And when I say speak to them, I don't mean socially. I'm on about, you know, prior to an interview, what have you, is they get frustrated that they believe they're quite responsible for a lot of some of the positive announcements a government can make or what have you. And you've got the National Parliament taking credit for things that the MEPs feel that they're responsible for. So sometimes the impression I got from them, their greatest challenge in getting the importance of Europe across to the constituents is the central government or the Dublin-based government taking credit for stuff that they're achieving, if that makes sense.
That does make sense, because you're elected to Europe and you're gone and forgotten about at that national level of politics. You don't have a vote in the national parliament. You can vote away all night in Europe. Nobody's ever going to notice it. You would have to be able to rise above that on an individual basis with a good PR machine that can get back to Donegal or back to Leitrim, Sligo or Monaghan. That has been happening. It did happen back in the early days, you know, when it was a novelty. 1979, we had elections to the European Parliament, and there was a huge buzz of excitement. But you had very big teams out on the road there and with the candidates. You were not going to have that anymore. Like, that day of grassroots work and support is gone. I don't want to sound cynical.
No, but
hours of the morning. But,
yeah, no.
You know.
Listen, we wouldn't have invited you on if you couldn't get cynical before 10. The thing is too, you could argue though, couldn't you, that one of the only MEPs, and there are probably other examples that escape me at the moment, but the only MEP that I can think of that has sort of made Brussels and your relevant two issues would be Luke Minflanagan, as you outlined there with the defective concrete, the work he's been doing on that. That's the only sense maybe a lot of people might get that Europe has any really impact on their day-to-day, which I think...
Luke Minflanagan, he is a communicator. He's an arts communicator. He's well-known. He's very articulate. He knows and reads into his brief. I've watched him perform on numbers of occasions when he came up to Letterkenny on various other issues. Particularly on farm grants and all this kind of thing. And he was very much on top of his brief, more so than the most senior members of the parties. So there had been a report that he might not be running this time, but he is definitely running. I mean, the fact that he was here in Donegal with the petitions committee there just very, very recently, and he stole the limelight on that, and probably rightly so. But, I mean, you have to look beyond that and ask, what are the issues that we are going to be dealing with in Europe? Are we now well enough off, you know, that we don't really matter anymore, that we're going to be a net contributor for the rest of our days? It depends on the foreign direct investment and the corporation.
It's making that link, though. It's making that link that anything that an MEP does has any impact on your day-to-day life. I'm not saying they don't, but it has to be articulated, or else we could see a 40% turnout in that regard. Because I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting to hear what the listeners might have to say on that.
When you look at the likes of two of the firebrand politicians that literally disappeared into the ether of the system, that was Clare Daly and Mick Wallace. We haven't heard from them. They are extreme left-wing supporters.
But in fairness now, they have been very active and vocal.
They're not
focusing on Irish issues as such. They've inserted themselves more into the situation in Russia, the Middle East.
I mean,
Mick Wallace was in China? He was over there in China saying how the West is terrible. So they've been really, really busy, but not really progressing the concerns of the Irish.
Are they really connecting very much with the Irish electorate or with the Irish psyche anymore?
I don't think so.
How often do you see a press release coming across your desk there from either of the two of them?
Oh, well, I don't think they're really concerning themselves greatly with Irish politics, if the truth be told.
But if you're not bothering about Irish politics, how do you expect Irish people to vote for you? You see, the seats there are probably going to be going a begging. Mick Wallace's could be one of them. Clare Daly's definitely could be another one. It depends. Fianna Fáil done really badly at the last elections. I mean, they have nothing in Midlands Northwest. Billy Keller is in the south. He's retiring. There's just seats going to be up for grabs there. Deirdre Clune of Fine Gael is also going. So, like, you're going to have vacancies, and this time around, Greg, whether you notice it or not, you don't seem to have a raft of strong names that you can identify with a good run at Europe. You know, our two new MPs, Colm Markey and Chris McManus, they've done a fair bit of running up on this end of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But are they connecting that well? Luke Minflanagan always will connect. Maria Walsh is connecting very strongly. And Francis Fitzgerald, having gone to Europe, would have been a very, very... a very articulate and a very experienced politician. But see, the constituency is such a big spread, and they're depending to a fair extent on the grassroots and on their constituency organisations, say in Letterkenny and the main towns. There's not too much happening around those places nowadays, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no big crowds attending meetings, although I think there was a reasonable crowd last night for Jimmy Cavanagh's convention in the Radisson. Well, I just had a handle on that sometime overnight, but you're not getting crowds to come out and back you and get out and deliver on the doorstep the leaflets.
Right.
And if you can't do that, you're in bother.
Okay, so Let's just then start digging in a little bit deeper, maybe a little bit. Mairead McGuinness confirmed this week, too, that she'll not be a candidate in the European Parliament elections next June. She's also expressed a desire to stay or serve as commissioner beyond next summer. Now, there is an arrangement between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and other government parties for that EU commissioner's position. It is one that Charlie McConnell is at least interested in because he's not ruled himself out of contention. I mean, he is in a sticky wicket. I hope he doesn't mind me saying so. In that, you know, obviously, in his constituency, the big issue is defective concrete, and he's had to come out and bat for the government a lot in relation to that, I'm told. So, do you see him as the solution here is Charlie McConnell is selected to go to Europe? Then we see 5K a day, Pat the Colt Gallagher, making his return to politics. It would retain the Fianna Fáil seat in Donegal and fix a few problems. Not problems, but you know what I mean. It would make sense. Could you see that happening?
I'd never rule that out. Find it a bit, I'd be a bit sceptical about Charlie McConnell. He's a young politician. He probably has other ambitions at home. If he goes to Europe, it's probably the end of his life in politics as such, you know.
But what else is there left to achieve? He's a minister. He sat around the cabinet table. Being young is it to his favour, is he not? Then he can head over to Europe, a nice EU commissioner's job.
I mean, can you see the other parties literally conceding in a show to Sinn Féin and the Make a Redress party? Because like that's,
but are those a couple of the reasons exactly why you might say, "What I can progress my career here and not have to maybe get a spanking at the ballot box." I don't know. He's been written off before and topped the polls, so I wouldn't say there's any certainty there.
Fianna Fáil has been performing very flat in all of the polls this last couple of years. It's not looking that sparkly for them at all because Micheál Martin, despite being probably a very nice man and all that kind of thing, is not rising the party. His own ratings are fine, but the party ratings are not. And talking to grassroots Fianna Fáil people in and around us here in Donegal, the whole spark has gone out of them because they have not forgiven Fianna Fáil for going into government with Fine Gael. And, you know, the European elections is going to be a real test case for that there. It's the first chance that Fianna Fáil voters, and or indeed Fine Gael voters, have had to express a view that is negative to that decision. Grassroots are very negative about it. Not so much Fine Gael, but Fine Gael is very cagey about
it. Yeah, but with a very low turnout, a well-organised political party could actually seem to have a very good election, you know, counteract that apathy with motivating the troops.
Yeah, you could, but, you know, do you see that happening?
No.
You know, you have to have a strong... the last time, you know, Peter Casey, to a fair extent, none of us ever saw him getting a seat, really, did we? But he energised the campaign because the threat of getting a decent vote was always there. Not so much that it might elect him, but it might deselect somebody else who was in the running for the seat because Casey voters were just spread right across the it was 13 counties that time, you know. He was totally unknown, apart from his stint on TV.
You see, he gave,
TV
the
some
thing
years
with
earlier.
Peter Casey is whether you liked the message or not, he gave you something to hang your hat on. Whereas, you know, what will the other debates, if we had a roundtable debate ahead of the European elections, what are people going to talk about? I'm going to go here and argue for this, and I'm going to get, you know, as I say, at least with Peter Casey, is right, okay, well, that's something I can vote for, yes or no. Now, whether or not you believe or not he could fulfil those promises is besides the point, but I think it was a clear, decisive message that motivated people.
Wasn't it? And it was a very simple message, just mention the word travellers. They're well off, they're this, that and the other thing. It's a sort of a right-wing notion. Right-wing politics is alive and well there. You know, and as you look at that there, you really didn't have any big issue or any small issues the last time. It was just the names. Forget about Matt Carty coming in there, energised the campaign for Sinn Féin. And I remember meeting him a couple of times, and the seat seemed to be his comfortably, which it ended up. Luke Mang Flanagan was going to hold that seat. Mairead McGuinness is coming in as a strong Fine Gael figurehead, she was going to get that seat. So there wasn't that much to play for there. Mm-hmm. And Maria Walsh became that figurehead.
Right. So just to run through here, the current MEPs for Midlands North West, Fine Gael's Maria Walsh, you believe she gets re-elected?
I think so.
Sinn Féin's Chris McManus, he will get re-elected, surely?
I think they'll need a second runner with Chris.
Okay. Fine Gael's... go ahead, yep.
Far be it from me to sort of advise Sinn Féin, but Matt Carthy was a pretty well known figurehead, very articulate, very vocal, and he was the up and coming man in Sinn Féin.
And people voted for him leader, full maybe. In the knowledge that if he got elected to the Dáil, he would give up that seat as well too, which I thought was really interesting. Colm Markey.
Colin's
Fine Gael, he called me Darren a couple of times, but I forgave him for that, so that's all right. Independent Luke Mingflanagan, you would see that. So do you see everyone in that list, if they get the strategies right, particularly from a party perspective, retaining their seats?
I would have question marks about Colm Markey holding that seat for Fine Gael. Chris McManus, the party riding very high in the polls, you know, I was just looking through some of the Red Sea constituencies and, you know, Fianna Fáil's vote is desperate in the Midlands Northwest when you drill down into it. Now, they have to get up off their asses and overcome that. Are they going to sort of run two candidates or three candidates? I haven't a clue because it's all speculation here. Fianna Fáil hasn't given any indication because they had such a bad performance the last time. They felt that they were guaranteed Brendan Smith's seat and he performed woefully. And unless they have a very strong team this time, the same is going to happen to them.
So then, from a Fianna Fáil perspective, just to wrap up the EU side of things, how do they decide between Lisa, like, would Fianna Fáil want to, in inverted commas, lose Lisa Chambers to Europe? I'm not really quite sure about that. But how do you select between, I mean, can you run Barry Cowan and Lisa Chambers or Barry Cowan and Niall Blaney, you know, north and south? But you don't want, like, we had a controversy in Fianna Fáil before where a Donegal candidate was used effectively as a sweeper for another candidate, which was a bit of a shafting, if you ask me. So where people run and how they are backed is really quite critical, you know, and people might pull their names out if they don't feel they're actually being seen as the person likely to get that seat. So unravel that for me. How do they decide? How many do they run? Who gets it?
I think this is going to be decided long before there's a meeting held about. People are going to be advised how to vote by the hierarchy in Dublin. They'll just look at their best, what's going to be the best options here. And as far as shaftings and all that goes in Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil, it's been there for a long, long time and they're pretty professional at it. Nowadays, they're in a very different place because their vote is way, way down there. And they need to put forward the very best candidate they have and hope that a sweeper will take up the slack and get them elected. Because, you see, they're starting from a base
of nothing. But who's the candidate? Is Brian Cowan the candidate? And whomever goes, I can't see Niall Blaney or Lisa Chambers adopting the role of sweeper, for an example.
They might have no option. Lisa Chambers, you know, she's there in Mayo. Derek Cleary's there, you know. Her chances of getting back a Dáil seat are probably not that bright. Her best option might be Europe, and then hopefully after Europe get back in again. She's young. She's pretty vocal as well, but I mean she lost her seat in Mayo, full stop. Now, I don't see Fianna Fáil with any other big names well-placed. Niall Blaney is not well-placed up here in the Fannet Head area of Donegal. The Blaney name probably does not travel as it used to 20, 30 years ago.
And he is he's controversial. You know what I mean? Niall shoots from the hip.
Really?
No?
He shoots, but it might not be from the hip all the time.
Well, where else?
You see, if you're going to shoot from the hip, you must be sort of and getting a positive reaction from a negative perspective, if you can understand that.
Yes.
Niall is missing that point, has continued to miss it. You know, I don't know if we have a better candidate in Donegal at the moment that would even want to think of running. I'm not hearing of anyone. But if he is selected to run and have to go through a convention, the best of luck to him. It's a long time since the Blaney's had a name in Europe for two consecutive sessions in the 70s and 80s.
Right, so just finally then to the general election, have you any firm information who's going to contest it for Fine Gael?
We'll see the outcome of the local elections.
Are they genuinely going to wait?
I think they have no option but to wait. First of all, they have a number of conventions yet to go. They're concentrating on getting their council candidates up and running and out there in the public eye. I suppose you're getting a lot of PR at the moment from all parties, but Fine Gael has four seats. They need to double that. We said that the last time, we said the time before that, but it's not happening for them. With Joe McHugh now departing, are they going to be depending on a younger, newer candidate in the name of Aaron Sweeney, or is he still in the race? Their convention last night in Letterkenny was just for Letterkenny, and that was Jimmy Kavanagh. There isn't any word of a second candidate there. Fine Gael would be depending on a new, younger candidate, but that would depend on how that candidate might perform at the local elections.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're currently...
it's hard to know.
I'm sure they're currently massaging that situation in a positive way.
Is there much of a situation there to massage? You know?
I don't know.
Fianna Fáil is in a very different position. They have 12 councillors. They have not made any moves at all. They'll probably announce their candidates for the local elections on Good Friday or some other day like that, when everybody else has already run the race. Fianna Fáil is in the game a very, very long time. They know their backs are up to the wall. And you look at the 12 seats that they have there in the council, bar, I don't know if anybody's retiring or anything like that, but those seats are pretty bankers.
Pretty solid,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Pretty solid. You know?
Right, so you're not taking me on, are you, that...
It's not a question of not taking you on.
You're not taking me on that under this programme for government arrangement between the coalition parties that Charlie McConnellogue might get that nomination for EU Commissioner. Mary Coughlan's back in the game down south. Pat the Cope Gallagher, I presume, you know, he would do very, very well.
Mary Coughlan emphatically ruled herself out.
No, in terms of organisation.
But I mean, she's gone a long time from the party. Fianna Fáil has changed an awful lot since Mary Coughlan was one of the top dogs.
Yes, but it's far removed from the difficult situation in Inishowen is what I'm suggesting. But you don't buy that? You believe Charlie will contest the election, Charlie McConnellogue?
He hasn't said anything to say that he won't. And until he does say that, Fianna Fáil will have him under immense pressure to run in Inishowen, because if he walks away from it, they'll be seen as conceding it to one of the... candidates
Not if you are going on to another high-profile job. You see, that's the point. You know, and then you can focus your resources in the southwest.
You're way outside national politics at that point. You know, Charlie McConnellogue is just probably at the pinnacle of his career. Joe McHugh was there as well, and he has opted out. But it's a different thing. Fianna Fáil needs to win that seat in Inishowen, because if they don't win it in Inishowen, where else can they win it? You know, they'll need to come out of Inishowen with 6,000 or 7,000 votes. Do you see that happening?
It's all fascinating stuff, as always, John.
Do you actually see the redress party?
Well, I don't know, because people have written Minister Charlie McConnellogue off in the past, and he's proven them wrong. And it can be quite difficult, even with the right issue, it can be quite difficult to gain traction. Do you know what I mean? And this is why the local elections are so important, because the redress party, they're going at it full guns blazing. But, you know, what do they see as a successful return that you could then move forward and secure a Dáil seat?
Don't look past the fact that Fianna Fáil has been throwing a pile of money into Donegal. You know, people are not talking about piers and harbours and all that kind of thing. I'm just looking at Port Salon there. There's 1.5 million being spent there on the restoration of a wall. Every pier and harbour in Donegal, farmers have got a fair whack of money as well from McConnellogue. He hasn't got fair return for that. I don't know what's wrong with that whole situation. Is not the ordinary farmers.
Now you're making it sound like I'm criticising him, and you're building him up, John. What are you
the
doing?
The last thing I would ever do is criticise you, because I mean I'm dependent on you for publicity and getting on the 9 till noon show.
By the way, if you're lucky, you can get the Chiconnell Tribune late on a Wednesday, but definitely on a Thursday morning. John, listen, thanks for your time as always, all right?
Thanks, Greg.
Take care. It's a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
I know our listeners enjoy. God bless you, John. And the paper is out Wednesday night, and you can get your copy late on Wednesday or on, well, not terribly late on Thursday, or on Wednesday. Wednesday or on Thursday, back after these. Rosa Glacken, President at St. Vincent de Paul. Good morning to you, Rosa. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Greg. Good morning to you and to your listeners.
Right, we heard nationally that almost 200,000 people have been in touch with St. Vincent de Paul this year alone looking for help. The society says it's provided over €330 million of direct assistance to people who need help over the past 10 years. What is the situation in Donegal? What are the trends showing you?
Yes, we would be following that national trend, Greg. Definitely demand is there. We thought that perhaps the recent measures in the budget would make a huge difference, and they are. And people have said to us they are a great help. There are quite a number of payments coming on stream this week. And the Christmas bonus, of course, in December, and Double Children's Allowance. However, what we're finding is, with the rising cost of heating, electricity, fuel and so on, people started falling into arrears much more than we expected, mm-hmm. and, you know, began to panic with Christmas in the offing and so on. And obviously those payments will help them to put a chip in those arrears, but it's not...
Are people
as easy
good,
as that.
In terms of these lump payments, is there any problem in that, you know, people can find it difficult to manage the finances? Like that on the face of it, you know, it's there and they come all at once. And for some people, they might be getting 800, even over 1,000 mm-hmm. in rare cases this week. And yes, it's helpful, but are we supporting people in budgeting that money, that they can use that effectively?
Yes, that would be one thing that we would try very hard to advise people on how to manage their budget. But obviously, managing the budget maybe or not managing it has caused part of the problem in these arrears building up. But also what has contributed to the difficulties as well is the rising cost of food. And I'm sure you've heard many people saying that the weekly shopping seems to have just risen dramatically.
And it seems to be staying up there.
And
as
staying
well.
Up there. And cost of transport, of course.
Are you getting enough money to support people?
As always, Greg, the public are so generous and, you know, they're going online and donating. Our shops are doing very well. And could I just mention, you know, we have two shops in Letterkenny, both doing extremely well. However, the one at the station roundabout had to close on Saturdays because we hadn't enough volunteers.
Okay.
So if any of your listeners have a few hours,
so
we'd be delighted.
So if you can't give financially, you can give your time on a Saturday.
Absolutely. And people are still very generous about bringing stuff and very good quality merchandise into our shops, which is really important.
I just wish there was more funding made available for your society, because I'm not comparing. We need to be supporting everyone, okay? So I don't want anyone to think this is a controversial statement. But thanks to the generosity and some funding, €330 million of direct assistance to people over a decade. Last year, we spent €350 million housing refugees. Now, as I say, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be doing that, and I'm not comparing one with the other. Mm-hmm. And you can't simply take one lump of money from one issue and put it to the other. But when you see that the fantastic hard work that all of you do, €330 million over 10 years, yet the government can find that in 1 year to rightfully house refugees, I just wish you didn't constantly have to work so hard to gather the money to do the amazing work that you do, Rosa.
Oh, well, we just go from year to year, Greg. I suppose if you average that out at 3.3 million per year, but it probably started out at about one and a half, and then rose to maybe 5 or 6 in the last number of years. It's just down to cost of living. We don't really, you know, worry about, you know, where it's going to come from, because we've always found that people are generous and we've managed. So If anybody's out there listening and you're struggling, please ring us, especially people who are in paid employment, maybe have a mortgage and feel that they shouldn't be ringing us. They're the very people I would like to see calling on us, because they're not getting...
It's a judgment-free zone as well.
Yeah.
And they're not getting...
Oh, absolutely.
And they're not getting... You were going to say, sorry, they're
not getting the grants. Yeah, and okay. Also, it's confidential. And I know it's difficult to make that first call, but I would appeal to you, if you're listening and you're struggling, do call us.
Okay. And just to reiterate, in the last 2 minutes we have, Rosa, for people to support the annual Christmas appeal, because as you say, people are always generous. And again, mm-hmm. you're asking people to be generous once again, to make, particularly this time of year, a bit more manageable and tolerable for people.
Yes. Our theme is, you know, the wonder of Christmas, but will we have Christmas at all, is our theme. Our giving day is on the 10th of December, which will be at the churches, but people can donate online at svp.ie and nominate their local area. They always ask, is that going to go locally? And it is. Or they can leave a donation into our shops if they wish.
Yeah, and support the shops, and volunteers are needed to work in the shops, and you're not looking for huge commitments of time.
An hour or two in the week we'd be delighted to welcome anybody who has time to spare.
And you are there to help people. You can help people. And you're asking people who need help to come forward.
Absolutely. And we're dealing with such a varied need nowadays compared to what it was maybe 10 years ago. But, you know, we're adapting all the time. We're meeting different challenges.
And look, people who contributed in the past are now seeking help. And that's fine. And people, as you mentioned, working with mortgages... call and seek assistance, and then down the line you can become a contributor
if you so wish. Yes.
If that's up to you,
yes.
You know what I mean? Okay.
Absolutely.
Rosa, it's always lovely having you on. You do amazing work, you and all the team at St. Vincent de Paul. And it's always good to get an opportunity to thank you for that, as well as encouraging people to give as much as they can.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much indeed.